So Lars and I have, we haven't talked about this, but we have a deal for you, a real deal. And listening to Lorraine talking about the five sturdy desks that are for sale, we will cover whatever donation is necessary. For our own pockets, we will pay for those five sturdy desks for you, if you take our piano. Last week I received a sad phone call. It was a phone call I've been expecting. I've known this person for a long time. And the person who phoned, a fellow called Andy, who I've known for a long time as well, had told me that Shirley had died. And I'd spoken to her earlier on in the year, and I knew she had cancer and the time was going to come when she died. But that phone call reminded me of another phone call, a phone call that happened in the 90s. When I was at St. Peter's in Comichin. And it was Shirley on the other side of the phone. And she said with some fear and anticipation, would you be willing to do a funeral for my son? And I thought, yeah, why? Yeah, sure, I could do a funeral for your son. But you have to know something, He has AIDS. And it's been really difficult for us to find a parish who would do that funeral. And it's really, really difficult for us to find a funeral home that would do a full funeral, because he wants a full casket funeral. And we would love him to be buried in the parish in St. Peter's in Comichin. No problem, no problem at all. I have no problem with that. And it was at a time when, you know, when people with a lot of fear going on, beginning of the AIDS crisis, and people didn't really know what was happening. People were keeping folk away from the schools because of that, children away from the schools. And it was a really uneasy time in the life of the church and the life of our society. So I said, I have no problem with doing that. We'll go ahead and we'll do that. Although I didn't know a lot about AIDS, I didn't know a lot, I understand a lot about it, I thought, we can do this, we can handle this. And she said, but there's one thing you should know. He's a public figure. It's Dr. Peter. He's on television every night. And if you ever remember how Peter would come on television and kind of stand away from himself and say, this is what AIDS does. This is what's happening to someone with AIDS, etc., going through that. And I said, that would be fine. But the CBC will be coming and filming. And Peter wants to go and he wants to spend some time. He wants to see where he's going to be buried. And he grew up at St. Peter's and Comichin, and he wants to spend time in the church with you. And I said, I think I need to talk to the congregation. Because it was that time. It was the best of time and the worst of time. It was the worst of time because it was fear, anxiety, and people were reacting in a really poor way. But it was the best of time because people like Shirley and people like Dr. Peter were standing up and saying, this is who we are. And this is what's happening to us and to our family, and we need your support and we need your care. And I know that the parish where it was very supportive was in the West End. St. Paul's in the West End of Vancouver was very supportive for them. And so was the cathedral in Vancouver. So I talked to the congregation, and again, I didn't know a lot about it. But I talked to the congregation, I preached one Sunday morning, and only one person was against it. Only one person in the congregation was against it. And so we said, let's go ahead. And Peter came over, he flew over to Maple Bay, he came up to the churchyard, and we walked around the churchyard, and that person who was against it was there and was in tears. It was transformative for him. He said, nobody needs to go through this. Nobody should go through this. And we went down into the graveyard, and Peter touched the property where he's going to be buried, where he is buried. And we went up to the church and he rung the bell. And CBC filmed all of that. It was transformative for me. It was transformative for our family, because our daughter was one of the servers at the service. It was a change. It was one of those things you had to make a decision. You had to make a decision to stand and to go with what was happening, or to walk away. And walk away. And that's what we find in the gospel this morning. The gospel this morning is the story of Jesus saying, this is what it means to follow me. This is what is required to follow me and to go on this journey with me. And some of them didn't understand. Some of them didn't really know what this was all about, but took a chance and went with Jesus. And other ones walked away. They walked away. You know, I have a confession to make. I did that with Peter. But friends, I spent too much time in my ministry on those who walked away. Jesus deals with conflict in a variety of ways. Sometimes he kind of withdraws from conflict, a conflict situation. Like this is a conflict situation. Sometimes he withdraws and doesn't do anything and lets it live out. One of the famous ways that Jesus withdraws is when the woman was taken, caught in adultery, and they were saying, we're going to stone her to death. What did Jesus do? He kind of sits down and starts to write in the ground. The only time we hear about Jesus writing anything, wouldn't you want to know what he wrote that day? Wouldn't you? I would want to know what he wrote in the ground that day. The other times, he'll face it. He'll actually cause the conflict. Like the man with the withered hand in the synagogue. Look at this man here. He causes that conflict. He has that issue and he brings that in front of everybody. But here today, he doesn't get hooked in by those who would walk away. He doesn't get captured by them. He doesn't get any conversation with them and try and convince them. He doesn't go into conflict with them. He focuses on who he needs to focus on. And he focuses on Peter and the disciples. And they respond and they say, we're not sure what's going on here. We're not sure what you're asking us to do, but we're going to go with you. For me, that experience was following Shirley, looking after her son. It changed my world. It changed our world. It took us to a place where we'd never been before. We did a private service for Peter's family at St. Peter's and Commission. We were very much part of the public service in the cathedral in Vancouver. I have had a lifelong relationship with, or since that time, not lifelong, but a relationship with Dr. Peter's Center in Vancouver, where I go often. Shirley's often there. Shirley worked there up until recently. I've been involved with that family, looking after her daughter's Nancy's funeral, looking after Bob's funeral, her husband. And now I have the request from Andy. Andy, who phoned me last week, who's Dr. Peter's partner at the time, and said, Shirley wants you to look after her funeral. I can only thank her for that opportunity at that time and her love and her courage to say, here's something I think this church should be involved in. There's a journey this church should be on. Come with us and see what happens. And it was transformative. Transformative for us. Jesus in John's gospel is different from Jesus in other gospels. We have Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which is one gospel, the one style of gospel, and we have John's gospel, totally different. We see a humanity of Jesus in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's hard to find that in John's gospel. It's as if he comes down from heaven, touches down for a short period of time, and flies off into the future. There's not that same Jesus there. And John Spong says that John's gospel is actually the meditations on a Jewish mystic. And I like that. I like that. It's not the kind of earthy ground stories of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's an invitation into a mystery. An invitation. And today we come to the end of a long dialogue of Jesus. He has long dialogues in John's gospel. No pithy sayings. No parables. It's long dialogues. And as John Spong says, somebody asks him a question and it goes on forever again. Yeah? He says, you maybe know people like that. So here we have Jesus talking to them about something they don't understand. An invitation that comes down through history to us. It's an invitation around this table. It's an invitation to be part of this table. An invitation is to see beyond bread and wine. See beyond this wooden table. Enter into the mystery, which is the mighty acts of God in history, transforming our world, transforming individuals, transforming communities. It's an invitation to enter into a mystery. When I walked from down on the sacred journey from Alert Bay, one of the elders said to me, "Bishop, look beyond the obvious. When you're walking down the road, when you're passing trees, look beyond the obvious. Look beyond the obvious and don't just see a tree. See the plants around that tree. Don't just see the plants and the trees. See the forest, how the forest is all connected and the plants are connected. Look beyond that and see the animals coming and going and living all his relations. Look beyond that. Look beyond that and see the mystery which is the Creator." And that's what we are called to do as we enter up here to receive bread and wine, ordinary things which for us become extraordinary. We are invited to go into that. One of the lines in the liturgy of the Islands and Inlets I really like is, "In this time and in this place, heaven and earth have become one." In this time and in this place, heaven and earth have become one. As we enter up, we are invited to see that mystery, that heaven and earth are one in this time and place, that those who have served God in every generation are present with us. They are here. Heaven is here. Whatever that means, whatever that looks like, and I'm not sure if I know what it looks like, but it's here with us. But if I think about heaven, I think about Teresa of Calcutta reaching out and living with the poor. If I think about heaven, I think about Dietrich Bonhoeffer standing up against fascism and the evils of Nazi Germany and giving his life for it. If I think about heaven, I think about Martin Luther King Jr. and a bridge in Selma, Alabama, and crossing that. And that's what I think is a part of the mystery of God, because those folk are with us now as we gather here and as we participate in that Eucharist. And that's a mystery that we are invited to be part of, so that we know that we are called to be with the poor, on the streets with the poor, that we are called to stand up against fascism, whatever form and shape that takes, and that we are called to cross bridges. Bridges that would dismantle and take out from our culture, our society, and our churches, racism. That's why I believe Jesus is inviting us for. The option is there for us to walk away. Or the option is there for us to say, "I really don't understand. I don't know how this thing works, but I'm willing to journey along with you and see what it means for us as individuals, for us as family, and for us as a community of faith." Friends, yesterday, today, and tomorrow meet in that wonderful mystery of God's mighty acts of salvation when we take bread and wine together. Amen.